The Queen of Gospel has passed away. SRN's George Bonzani looks back on the career of Albertina Walker.
Walker, who succumbed to respiratory failure Friday at age 81, began singing in the children's choir of West Point Baptist Church in Chicago at age 4. At 22, she organized the Caravans, which became a world-famous gospel group with hits including Mary, Don't You Weep. Walker went on to a Grammy Award-winning solo career, recording 71 albums. She also helped launch the careers of stars such as Shirley Caesar and Dolores Washington. George Bonzani, SRN News.
Anti-Semitism has reared its head in Washington State. Two teens have been arrested in connection with anti-Semitic graffiti painted on a Jewish high school on Mercer Island. A 17-year-old is charged with malicious harassment, malicious mischief, and second-degree burglary. The graffiti covered most of the building's outer walls. Neighborhood residents helped the school clean it off. This is SRN News. For years, subway cars have been able to recycle some of the energy created when they break, turning it into electricity to help power the trains. SRN's Rich Thomason, though, says that might be changing.
The problem is, it's a short-term benefit with much of the energy wasted by the time the train stops braking. Now, transit agencies around the country are hoping to harness that lost energy by storing it in batteries and putting it back into the system. It's something that could potentially save millions of dollars in energy costs.
Chris Thomason says the idea of storing the power is enticing for many transit agencies, with ridership up and systems expanding. Well, it's that time of the year, pumpkin weigh-offs, and they just had one in Ukiah, California. And Ben Fillmore of Talmadge won with a pumpkin of 1,048 pounds. That's nothing. He won the thing with one at 1,109 pounds just in 2008. But in this contest, he gets a dollar for every pound of pumpkin. More details at SRNnews.com.
The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is on, and we thank you for listening. Today we're tackling My Child Has Heart Palpitations and Extra Beats, with guest expert Dr. Bhavya Trivedi of the Pediatric Cardiology Associates in Tampa, Florida. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in the country with over 1,000 women during each of our last two events, with a combined 7,500 hours of education during these two symposia, is supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based healthcare safety net, making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families through the immediate impact of direct with the expert health education. And we have a column that I write every 2 months, which comes out in the Tampa Bay Women's newspaper. This newspaper is free and can be found at over 3,000 Tampa Bay area locations, such as medical offices, health clubs, specialty organic grocery stores, hair and beauty salons. Articles are educational, informational, and resourceful. Today, we have Dr. Bhavya Trivedi. And Bhavya, it's nice to see you here.
Thanks. Thanks for having me here.
This is the second in two radio shows on pediatric cardiology. On September the 12th, just a few weeks ago, Dr. Blaine John was with me, an associate of Dr. Trivedi's, and we tackled kids with murmurs, chest pain, and holes in the heart. That show is available, if you missed it and are interested in listening to it, on our website, focusonfemales.com. There's a link on the lower left corner of the homepage. It takes you to the radio show page. Scroll down during the year 2010, under the 2010 tab, and you'll see the podcast. You can just pull it up and listen to it. If you do have a question on murmurs, chest pains, or holes in the hearts regarding kids today, feel free to call in. Even though the primary focus is on abnormal rhythms of kids' hearts, but do feel free to call in and ask your question. And we encourage everyone to take this opportunity to give a call. Our number here to ask questions of Dr. Trivedi is 289-1860. That's Hillsborough County, 289-1860. Outside of Hillsborough County, it's toll-free, 877-969-8600. And those that are streaming live online, again, 877-969-8600. Dr. Bhavya Trivedi was born in India, raised in New York and Florida. At the University of Miami School of Medicine, he completed his undergraduate, medical, and Ph.D. degrees with a focus on neuroscience and electrophysiology. During that time, he was a recipient of the prestigious Howard Hughes Medical Institute Predoctoral Fellowship Award. He completed his pediatric residency at Duke University Medical Center, where his interests in pediatric cardiology and electrophysiology were solidified. Dr. Trivedi remained at Duke for pediatric cardiology and electrophysiology training. His basic research interests included the embryonic development of the specialized cardiac conduction system and the initiation of the heartbeat. He also conducted clinical research pertaining to arrhythmias in patients with hypoplastic left heart syndrome or poorly developed left side of the heart. Dr. Trivedi moved to the Tampa Bay area in 2009 with a dedicated practice for pediatric electrophysiology, including the management of arrhythmias, pacemakers, and fainting spells, known as syncope. His interests include arrhythmias in patients with congenital heart disease, as well as catheter ablation procedures for the treatment of arrhythmias. And we're going to get into all this as the show unfolds. And if you have questions on, for example, what we just talked about, feel free to call and ask those. We're here for you. Bhavya, let's start at the beginning.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the rhythm of the heart, and when it first can be detected, and let's begin there.
So the heartbeat is a very interesting thing, and this is, of course, something that has been of interest to scientists, philosophers, and religion for thousands of years. And over the last 100 years, there has been a great increase in understanding of how the heart works. Interestingly, we all have a brain. The brain has nerve connections to the heart, but you don't need these nerve connections for you to have a heartbeat. So even though the electrical activity that creates the heartbeat is similar to electrical activity in nerve cells, nerve contact with the heart is not necessary. This is what makes heart transplant possible, is you take a heart out, and if you are able to keep the cells alive, it will continue to beat.
So the heart itself has cells which of itself can initiate the heartbeat.
Exactly, and that is the pacemaker of the heart. You know, we talk about pacemakers in medicine as devices that we put in when someone's heart does not pace properly or does not conduct properly. But the heart itself has its own pacemaker. So this internal pacemaker, something called the SA node, is at the top right corner of your heart, so to speak. And that is where the heartbeat is initiated.
And tell us, let's run through the cardiac conduction system. It begins mm-hmm. with the so-called SA node, and there are cells there that, initiate a... Was it a polarization or depolarization?
Exactly. It's a depolarization, which is repetitive. It's based on an internal clock within those cells, that clock is modulated by other factors. But that SA node starts that heartbeat. And one thing I'll clarify here, and this is what seems to confuse a lot of people, especially those without a lot of medical background, but, you know, we all know what our heart is. We all know what our heartbeat is. We measure our heart rate. All of that. And people often ask me, you know, you did an echocardiogram, you took pictures of my heart with ultrasound, you know, can't you see this electrical stuff? Can't you see this electrical activity with an ultrasound? And the answer is no, we cannot. It's different than the physically what you see. It's an electrical phenomenon happening through the cells. And all of the heart muscle cells conduct this electricity as it flows through the heart.
Okay. Let's go through. You mentioned this so-called SA mm-hmm. node. For people that are listening that understand the heart as, you know, four chambers, the
yes.
right atrium, the right ventricle, left atrium, left ventricle, is the SA node where the heartbeat originates, is that considered to be in one of those chambers, or is it in the wall between the chambers?
It's in the wall of the right atrium, right where the vein from above joins that right atrium. The vein from above, known as the SVC, superior vena cava, joins the right atrium.
Which
brings blood back from the upper part of your body, so arms and head.
Okay. All right. So, and from the SA node, which is in the wall of the right atrium, where's how does the cells that depolarize in that location cause the entire heart to contract in the rhythm it does?
Mm-hmm. So from the SA node, those cells have direct connection to the muscle of that right atrium. And through the muscle and through special fibers taking the electricity across to the left atrium, the upper chambers contract. And so that's the first step in a single heartbeat, the contraction of the upper chambers.
Can we think of it as sort of an electrical domino effect?
Yes, exactly. It's a continuous sort of like a railroad, which has been pieced together. As the train goes down, it goes from along the track. But the track wasn't one long length to start with. Each one had to be placed in. So each of those is one heart cell after another. And when the train goes down the track, the electricity flows through these cells one after the other.
Okay, and that's in the normal situation.
Exactly.
And it's I'm sure it's imperative that for normal or maximum heartbeat or effective heartbeat, this electrical depolarization or domino effect has to occur in exactly the right way, with the right cells, the right chambers being stimulated to contract before other ones.
Right. So the upper chambers contract first, and that creates a particular wave that we look at on people's electrocardiograms. When it gets through those atria, now the electricity hits what are called the atrioventricular valves, the valves that separate the upper chambers from the lower chambers. These valves are designed in such a way that electricity is not supposed to cross them. So in the normal condition, electricity should not cross those valves at all, except at one point in the center of the heart.
Okay, so the electricity should not cross from the upper chambers into the lower chambers except for one location and one location only.
Exactly.
And that's critically important, I imagine.
Yes, so that is called the AV node, the atrioventricular node. It's when we talk about conduction system, we talk about parts of the heart that are considered the specialized conduction system. So that includes the SA node where the heartbeat starts, and the next major structure in the specialized conduction system is that AV node.
And let's say that this was not the case. Then, for example, the blood, just to give an example mm-hmm. of how, if this were not the case, then the ventricles, the large pumping chambers, could pump before the blood was fully in the chamber itself.
That's true. That could happen. You know, interestingly enough, if you don't have an AV node, that does not mean your lower chambers don't contract. Your ventricles actually still contract because each of those heart cells has the ability to start the heartbeat. However, it will be significantly slower than the normal heartbeat that is started by the SA node.
Okay. Let me ask you an interesting question. Well, I think it's an interesting question. We can detect, we listen to fetal heartbeats.
Mm-hmm.
At what age can we detect an abnormal fetal heartbeat?
In the first trimester.
The very first trimester?
Yes. As soon as the heartbeat, when the heartbeat is detectable with ultrasound techniques, irregularities in the heartbeat can be detected very early.
Okay, and before we go back to that, let's just talk about what is an arrhythmia.
Mm-hmm. Arrhythmias classified generally into two types. Yeah, if your heart is beating normally, then you are in what we call normal rhythm, or medical speak, normal sinus rhythm, meaning it's coming from the sinus node. If it's not coming from the sinus node and you have an abnormal rhythm, then it's either too fast or it's too slow. So in medical speak, too fast, tachycardia, or tachyarrhythmia, and too slow being bradycardia or bradyarrhythmia. And those two problems are dealt with in different ways, as you could imagine.
And what other, besides too fast and too slow, what other abnormal heartbeats could there be, for example?
Not a whole lot.
Okay.
Other than that.
But the different types of too fast, different types of too slow.
Exactly. There are many different types of too fast and different types of too slow. Too fast could be something like things that result in sudden cardiac arrest. Ventricular fibrillation is too fast and disorganized. Too fast could be some of us feel extra beats after a large cup of coffee. Those are extra beats, and your heart might be fast, and it may not feel good for a little while, but that's not a life-threatening situation.
Let's go back now to applying this information to kids and again, developing fetus. You said in the first trimester you can mm-hmm. detect an abnormal rhythm. Can you detect an abnormal slow rhythm as well as an abnormal fast rhythm?
Yes. Yes, both can be detected. And a lot of that work is done by our partners in obstetrics, who have become very good at doing fetal ultrasound, detecting heart rhythm issues. And if they detect that, then they often get referred to a pediatric cardiologist who specializes in fetal cardiology.
Let's start here. The normal heartbeat in a developing fetus, say the first or second trimester, is?
In the hundreds.
Okay.
So you're looking at a heartbeat that's 140 to 180.
And for a child?
For a child, this is where things get interesting, because people often ask, what is a normal heartbeat for my child? And it's very dependent on age. So at birth and in the neonatal period, your heart rate is going to be faster. And as you grow, it gradually slows. At the same time, we have to keep in mind what was the child doing when the heart rate was measured? Was the child at rest? Was the child active, crying, something like that? So all of those, the situation has to be taken into account when considering what's a normal heartbeat.
So the context is very important. There's a lot of variability.
Exactly. And a child, for example, an infant's heart rate could be normal anywhere from mid-70s up to as high as 220.
Wow. Okay, so obviously the 220 when they're excitable,
mm-hmm.
the 70 maybe at resting while they're sleeping.
While they're sleeping, exactly.
Okay. And what would you advise parents to act or do if their child complains of their heart beating too fast?
When a child says, my heart is racing, it's important to simply just look at your child. You are the parent of this child. You have watched this child grow up and develop. When a child asks that question or brings up that concern, then, these are going to be children who are usually over the age of 4. When they can recognize that their heart is beating too fast and maybe that doesn't make them feel good. Look at the child and see how they look. You know, does this child look like a child who is sick? Does this child look like a child who is feeling okay, can continue playing the game that they were playing, but is just bringing something up to you? And if, you know, of course, you as the parent have to make that determination. My child is not looking right, is not acting right. I need to seek medical attention or not.
And the same recommendations if the child complains of chest pain?
Chest pain is a slightly different ballgame. Chest pain, you know, children have different words for, you know, the things that we experience as adults and have certain words for it. Children tend to come up with their own words for things. For example, one common thing I hear in my clinic is a child who comes in and says, my heart is beeping too fast. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for whatever reason, they use the word beep.
Mm-hmm.
And my heart's beeping too fast. Other children may actually be feeling palpitations, which is what that child is describing, may be feeling palpitations, but feel it as pain. Another child may come and say, you know, I can't take a deep breath. I can't get a breath in. Because their heart's beating too fast, sometimes it makes a choking kind of feeling in your throat, and they will say, I can't breathe right.
Mm-hmm.
So different complaints can be related to an abnormal heart rhythm.
And I imagine it's again, going back to the context, if they've just been running around nonstop for 15 minutes
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and they feel they can't get a breath versus a child who's at rest saying they can't get a breath.
Exactly, exactly. And the more concerning types of heart rhythm problems, you know, there are two types. There are those that can be brought on by exercise. And obviously, if your child passes out or faints with exercise, that's very concerning, and that should be looked at by a pediatric cardiologist. The other scenario is a truly abnormal fast heart rhythm, which is quite common, something we call SVT, supraventricular tachycardia. One of the key characteristics of SVT is that it's often brought on when the child is at rest. So may just be sitting, watching TV, and suddenly the heart starts beating fast. The other characteristic of SVT is that it comes on very suddenly. It comes on very suddenly and may last several minutes and then often stops very suddenly.
Hmm. And you say that was the most common abnormal beat that you see in kids?
One of the most common abnormal heart rhythms we see in kids and treat very successfully nowadays is SVT.
Mm-hmm. So let's say well, let me back up and ask this. Do all your patients come and see you, the pediatric cardiologist, through the pediatrician as a consult? Do any patients go right to you to see you primarily?
It happens in both ways, but most come through their pediatrician. And many, because you can imagine that this is something that perhaps a child has never felt before, it's quite concerning. The child goes to the emergency room, and so then we see them after they've been seen in the emergency room and evaluated for these types of heart problems.
Okay. And so SVT, supraventricular tachycardia, very mm-hmm. common to see. How do you work up a patient? When the mom's there and the child's there, as you mentioned before, I'm sure you'd ask the context of
right
of when this occurred. What other questions or what other workup would you do to evaluate this, and for that matter, other abnormal rhythms of the heart in the child?
Right. So the first thing is we always start with the history, and in the history, I try to get a sense of when they tell me the story about their abnormal heart rhythm. Is this sounding to me like a true problem that we're going to have to deal with, or is this something benign? And then the second issue is, are there any other problems that this child has? You know, SVT commonly occurs in children who are otherwise normal, meaning their heart is also otherwise normal. They have four normal chambers, normal valves, and no other problem with their heart has been it's never been noted before. So in our evaluation, we do look structurally at the heart with an echocardiogram, look at its function, and this is assuming that these episodes of arrhythmia for this particular child, which is the common scenario, is that they are intermittent, or what we call paroxysmal episodes, that the child is not in arrhythmia the majority of the time.
So the history, the context in which it occurred, then the evaluation includes echocardiogram, looking at the structure of the heart. Is the heart healthy from anatomical position? And then do you sometimes do a treadmill test or an exercise inducement of, or see if you can induce the abnormal rhythm?
And then the next step is the 12-lead, what we call the electrocardiogram. So this is what most people are familiar with. You come to your cardiologist's office, and they put leads on your chest and print a piece of paper, which shows the electrical activity of your heart. The electrocardiogram is extremely useful for us. So in electrophysiology, that is our number one diagnostic tool at the beginning.
And so that's at rest, the resting EKG.
Yes.
And then sometimes moving on to a exercise.
Right. And sometimes we have to do provocative testing, which could be an exercise test.
Okay. What other evaluations would you do? Any lab tests that you would take to try and evaluate abnormal rhythm?
Depending on the scenario, and that also depends on other symptoms that the child may have. We want to make sure anatomically that there are no tumors in the heart. We want to make sure that there isn't something common like a thyroid disease going on. And then there are a bunch of rare things that we occasionally look for. But most often, most of the children I see with arrhythmias are otherwise normal children.
Okay. We're going to take a break now and come right back. Call in with your questions, 289-1860 in Hillsborough County. Everywhere else, toll free, 877-969-8600. Today's show is on children's heart rhythms, abnormal children's heart rhythms. My child has heart palpitations and extra beats. We'll be right back with more.
With SRN News, I'm Michael Harrington in Washington. The candidates for President Obama's former Senate seat are trading accusations of misconduct. Debating on NBC-TV's Meet the Press program, Democrat Alexei Genudias accuses Republican Mark Kirk of making false claims about his military service and misrepresenting himself as a deficit hawk. Kirk accuses Genudias of helping to drive his family's bank out of business and lending money to, quote, infamous mob figures. Social Security benefits have had a cost of living adjustment built in since the 1970s, automatically rising virtually every year, but they didn't this year and they won't next year, as the trustees say they'll not be giving any cost of living increase for 2011. The winner of the Nobel Peace Prize has told his wife he's dedicating the award to the victims of China's 1989 crackdown on pro-democracy protesters. The imprisoned dissident was allowed to see his wife today, and she described their meeting on Twitter. This is SRN News.
America is asking some tough questions of President Obama.
Is this my new reality?
And the president is responding with continued pressure to end the Bush tax cuts.
You can't give $700 billion away to America's wealthiest people.
But is that really the answer to the problems facing America?
Raising taxes on anyone in a struggling economy is the exact wrong thing to do.
Now, more than ever.
Is the American dream dead for me?
Talk Radio 860, WGUL.
For the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. He has written a best-selling, award-winning book, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome, published by Yale University Press. Dr. Maskin manages dry eye disorders using, when needed, innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has successfully managed difficult dry eye cases for over 20 years and is board-certified, fellowship-trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and American Academy of Ophthalmology. He has been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2010. And as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America, we hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please visit drmaskin.com. And if you have not found relief for your painful red, dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Their mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit FocusOnFemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702. Thank you.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back. We are tackling My Child Has Heart Palpitations and Extra Beats. Our guest expert today is pediatric cardiologist Dr. Bhavya Trivedi of the Pediatric Cardiology Associates, the second of two shows on pediatric cardiology. And with Dr. Blaine John, we appreciate very much your sharing your expertise, Bhavya.
Thank you.
Okay, we're talking about, as I mentioned, abnormal cardiac rhythms in the child. A few quick questions, okay? Questions and answers. My child or my teenager passes out occasionally. What should the parent do?
Passing out in teenagers extremely common, but sometimes it's hard to know if that is a heart-related issue or not. So, you know, what I tell folks is it's not wrong to seek further medical attention if you don't know what's going on. And the good news is many of our evaluations for those turn out to show that the child's heart is normal. And they're happy to know that. But sometimes it's hard to know if this is the typical kind of teenage passing out, something we call vasovagal syncope, or not.
And I guess significantly is whether it passes out, again, at rest versus during activity.
Yeah, rest or activity, dehydration, you know, playing outdoors in the heat, especially in South Florida. Folks in band, teenagers, the passing out is extremely common.
How would you explain to listeners that don't know what a vasovagal reaction is?
That takes a little while. This is something I find myself explaining to people in clinic quite often. You know, we mentioned about the intrinsic conduction system of the heart, but there are nerves that go to the heart also. There's something called the autonomic nervous system. And there are two limbs of that autonomic nervous system. There's the part of the nervous system that speeds things up and the part that slows things down. And there are reflexes that occur within our brainstem between those two limbs. People can pass out in what we call vasovagal syncope if those reflexes are overactive.
Is that typically emotionally based?
Could be emotionally based, could be related to some activity, but often is related to dehydration and low blood pressure.
Okay. All right. My child was born with a heart defect. Will he also have an arrhythmia?
Congenital heart defects are quite common in children. As you probably heard from Dr. John a few weeks ago on the show, almost 1% of children that are born have some sort of heart defect. Fortunately, most of those are minor heart defects.
And when you say a heart defect, we're talking about anatomical heart defect?
Exactly. Okay. Those are anatomic heart defects, a hole in the heart, a valve problem, something like that. And in those scenarios, there is a higher incidence of heart rhythm problems. But most of these tend to occur as folks get older. So people who have heart surgery at a young age, when they get older, we do see heart rhythm problems in about 50% of them.
Now, you mentioned at the early part of the show that the SA node is in the wall of the right atrium.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, a hole in the between the two atria, is that typically associated with an arrhythmia?
Not always. But you hate to blame surgeons. They do the right thing. They fix these things. But sometimes there are defects that occur very close to the SA node. For example, an abnormal vein coming in there. Mm. And when that's repaired, there is a very high probability of damaging that SA node.
But there could also be a congenital hole in the heart near or including the SA node?
It would be rare to have congenital SA nodal problems.
Okay.
It's more common to have congenital, what we call heart block, and the AV node has a problem. And that can occur outside of the realm of a hole in the heart, or it can occur with some of those diseases.
Mm, okay. How do we help a heart that beats too slowly?
So that is where the pacemakers come in, and that is a situation that is carefully considered by us. When we see a child who has too slow a heartbeat, either because of heart block or some other issue. And it's a minor invasive procedure. The pacemaker, depending on the age of the child, can be placed in their belly or in their shoulder. And that pacemaker is a little device that has cables that go to the heart and send electrical signals to create the heartbeat.
How young can a child be, or an infant be for that matter, to receive a pacemaker?
We're breaking limits on that all the time. Premature infants who are 1.5 kilos in weight can get a pacemaker.
1.5 kilos. So
yes.
Give our audience an estimation how many weeks...
A child that is born at, say, 25 weeks gestation, so normal gestation being 40 weeks, a child born at 25 to 30 weeks gestation could be in that 1 kilo or above range. There are pacemakers nowadays small enough that can be placed by surgeons in those small infants.
And on some occasions, will a child be delivered through a cesarean section to have a pacemaker inserted if it's determined that they need the pacemaker?
Yes, and sometimes we do have to do that, that if the heart rate is too slow in utero and that is detected and the child is in heart failure, meaning there is a consequence of that too slow a heart rate and the baby is not developing well and has a risk of actually having intrauterine demise, then we would recommend delivering the child with pediatric cardiologists, possibly surgeons, ready soon afterwards to do a pacemaker.
Dr. John mentioned some of the techniques that can be employed to operate on a fetus cardiac-wise,
mm-hmm.
opening up obstructed valves and so forth.
Right.
Is there such a thing, too, where you don't have to deliver the fetus, but it could be you can work on the cardiac induction system, keeping the child in utero?
Not yet, but it's getting there. It's getting there. Probably in the next 5 years, we'll see something to that effect.
Okay. A few more questions before we go to Gina, who's on the line. We'll be right with you, Gina. What is a treatment for arrhythmias with rapid heart rate?
Depends on the rapid heart rate. So the most common one that we see is supraventricular tachycardia, or SVT for short. And that can be dealt with in several ways. One is medication. And before procedures to fix it became very good and safe, that was often how it was treated, with not a lot of success. Nowadays, there is a procedure we do, something called catheter ablation. So using catheters that go through the veins into the heart, we can figure out where is the short circuit that is causing this fast heart rate, figure out where this, quote, extra wire is, and do an ablation, which means get rid of that extra wire.
And do you use freezing techniques, or do you use heat, or how do you ablate the abnormal cell?
Both, and both have their advantages and disadvantages. The heat one has been around longer, something called radiofrequency ablation. It has very high success rates. The risk, however, is a little bit higher because at the same time you want to get rid of the extra wire that is causing this abnormal heart rhythm, you don't want to damage the normal conduction system of the heart, the normal wire or the AV node, as we talked about. So in those scenarios, the freezing catheter is a little bit safer.
Is the freezing catheter more, does it deliver its therapy in a more confined space? So you have more control over what cells receive the therapeutic dosage?
It's not just the space, it's also timing. Timing and cooling. When you burn those cells with the radiofrequency ablation catheter, they die immediately.
Okay.
If you freeze them, cells don't die immediately when you freeze them. When we say freeze, we're talking quite cold, you know, minus 80 degrees Celsius at mm-hmm. that point where the catheter is touching the heart. Initially, what happens is all the cells go numb and they stop conducting even though they're not dead.
All the cells that come in direct, actually, you can get a wave of freezing beyond what you actually touch, though, right?
Exactly. And so what we look for is during those initial 1 to 2 minutes where everything has gone numb but has not been killed yet, if the normal wire of the heart is affected, then we can stop. You thaw everything back, and it returns.
Mm. Okay. So you have a better chance of mapping the actual therapy with the freezing?
You have a better chance of not damaging the normal conduction system.
Mm-hmm. And this is considered an EP procedure, that terminology, so our listeners hear
yes.
it. EP
yes.
meaning electrophysiology
EP,
procedure.
EP, short for electrophysiology, exactly.
Okay. What if a child takes ADHD medication? Should that heart be evaluated?
It depends. There are no specific guidelines, but the general recommendation nowadays is that children who take ADD medication should get an electrocardiogram as a screening test.
And why is that?
Because these drugs can cause changes to your EKG that could predispose to arrhythmias. And there have been some reports of serious heart problems associated with ADD medications. The reports are rare, so rare that of course these drugs are still widely used. But because of this slight possibility, a simple EKG is not hard to do.
Also antihistamines, correct?
Antihistamines,
a rare report.
Yeah, extremely rare. Antihistamines and also more likely to do that in people with certain genetic defects that predispose to heart rhythm problems.
Are there any particular ADHD medications that come to mind that you recommend the evaluation with a baseline EKG?
What I recommend is for any of those ADD drugs, you know, there
okay.
aren't many that we have seen that don't cause those problems.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we recommend a baseline EKG before starting the drug and then again after being on the drug. And a lot of that is done by the pediatricians who are very good. And if they see a problem on the EKG, then they refer to us.
Got it. Okay, on the line is Gina. Gina is the mom of a patient of Dr. Trivedi's. And Gina, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for being here. Tell us about Matthew.
Well, when Matthew was an infant, periodically when I was changing him, I'd noticed that his lips would turn a bluish tint. And I'd mentioned that to the pediatrician, and she said to keep an eye on it. And when he was 2, he had a seizure. And we took him to the emergency room at All Children's, and he had all the tests run, and they couldn't find anything wrong with him. And when he was 4 years old, he's 5 now, so this is last year, he came up to my husband and I and said his heart was beating fast. And we felt it, and it was very rapid, his heartbeat. And he said, oh, don't worry. It happens all the time. It's nothing to worry about.
Matt said that to you, right?
Matt said that to me. We freaked out a little bit, actually. So I took him to the pediatrician that morning, and she said, I think it's time that you see a cardiologist.
But she felt something was awry.
Just because of the past. You know, between the history of the seizure and when he was an infant with the lips blue, she wasn't comfortable with the way things had been heading. And so she recommended Dr. T. And so we took him over to Matthew over to see him. And I wasn't expecting much. I was expecting the, okay, Mom, you're acting a little overprotective. But Dr. Trivedi said, I think that we might have something here. Let's do some research and find out. Mm-hmm. And he put was a Holter monitor. Was that right?
Yeah. Hey, Gina, how are you?
Hi. Good. How are you? Good. Which one was it, Dr. T?
It was a loop monitor. I'm glad you brought that up because mm-hmm. earlier when we were talking about tests that are done, we do the EKG, but then there are also monitors that patients take home with them, a 24-hour monitor, a Holter, that gives us a lot of information. And in Matthew's case, the loop monitor, which is something he wore for many days, mm-hmm. Helped us see his arrhythmia.
It sounds like this was a what you'd call a paroxysmal arrhythmia in Matthew's case?
Right. It was paroxysmal, meaning it was occurring occasionally.
So kudos to the pediatrician who may not have heard anything abnormal, but
right.
felt with the history of the blue lips, the mm-hmm. seizure activity, let's be safe and not miss anything.
Right, right.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So what would your findings show you, Dr. T?
So with the loop monitor, we saw one of his recorded episodes, which was a very fast heart rate in the range of 260 to 280 beats a minute. And the nice thing about the loop monitor is, at the moment that Matthew felt it, he would press the button and record his EKG at that time, and that gets electronically sent in to us. And so when we saw that, then I think we called them back in to tell them that he truly had SVT.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And once you make that diagnosis, where do you go from there?
That is where, we usually have a discussion with the family because SVT in and of itself is not a life-threatening problem, but it disturbs your life significantly. In Matthew's case, he was going to the emergency room too often
mm-hmm.
With SVT and needing medications to stop it. And so in that scenario, you could use medicine to suppress the arrhythmia for some time. And the other option is a procedure that we mentioned, the catheter ablation, to fix it with pretty high cure rates of that procedure.
Now, Gina, I guess number one, what did you feel like or what were you thinking when you finally found some confirmation and discovery of what Matthew was referring to?
Well, I was relieved because it's very unsettling having the seizure and not knowing any answers, not knowing what the problem was. The doctors in the at the hospital, although they were very kind and did their best, they just couldn't identify what the problem was. And I knew something wasn't quite right with Matthew. And when Dr. T had identified that, I wasn't expecting it, but I was relieved because that's something that we could take care of. At least we could manage it in some way. And Matthew is like any typical five-year-old. He goes 100 miles an hour, and it's a relief to know that he can do it safely. He obviously had these heartbeats, rapid heartbeats, frequently, and just never knew that it was unusual because he kept assuring us that it happens all the time. It's not a big deal, Mom. Don't worry about it. But, we really did need to manage it in some way, so I was very nervous a little bit, but Dr. T was so reassuring and that it was common and it was easily taken care of. So I really, I was happy about the situation.
And was after Matthew's seizure, was he put on seizure medication by his doctors back then?
No, because they said the cause was idiopathic. Is that correct? Is that the way to say it?
And the seizure thing in Matthew, I'm not sure that was related to this heart rhythm problem mm-hmm. or not.
Mm-hmm.
Unlikely.
But he has not had another seizure since then?
He's been, since he's been in Dr. T's hands, he's been wonderful. I have no problems. And he, like I said, he runs 100 miles an hour. He plays soccer. He plays flag football. He does all the things a normal five-year-old boy should be able to do. And we have not had any incidents of where he's feeling out of breath or lightheaded or fast heartbeat, anything. So he's very pleased about it himself. He's aware of the whole thing, and he can tell you all about it if he needs to.
Now, does Matthew have any siblings?
Yes, he has an older sister, Lauren. She's 7.
And has Lauren had any of her own cardiac issues?
No, but, you know, Dr. Shee knows her too. So she came to visit him, and we had the whole workup just to make sure.
Is there a genetic component to these?
In SVT, no. Extremely rare for SVT to run in families. There's a rare type of something called WPW that can run in families. But in 99.9% of cases, this is not something that's genetic.
And if you have one type of cardiac arrhythmia, it doesn't necessarily mean a blood relative will have a different type. There's no, other than the WPW, there's really no other association.
Right, and even in WPW, there are only a few reported families where it runs in the family.
Okay, good. Is Matthew there to say hello?
Yes. Hold one moment. I will grab him.
So, you know, having made the diagnosis is so important for families, whatever the medical problem is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the unknowing, the not knowing why they're not doing well, why the patient's having pain or in this case, lips turn blue. It's the unknowing, which is so difficult. Hi, Matthew. How you doing?
Good.
Good. How are things going on? You playing ball today? You're watching the Rays?
I'm not watching the Rays, but I'm watching the Bucks.
Okay. Are they playing well enough for you?
Yeah, it's 7-7.
7-7. Okay. Well, it's still early in the game, right? They can come back or they can at least move out ahead, right?
Okay.
How's your heart doing, buddy?
Good.
No more fast beats, huh? What's your favorite sport, Matt?
Whoa.
Hey, Matthew, tell me, you went through the procedure. You know, what was the scary part of the procedure, and how did you feel afterwards?
Good. Well, not really anything was the scary part.
That's great.
Not really anything.
That's good. What's your favorite sport? Matthew?
What?
What's your favorite sport, hon?
Flag football.
Okay. When was the last time you played it?
I think it's, well, I played yesterday.
Yep. Did you have a good time?
Yeah.
All right. Good for you. Do you want to ask Dr. T anything? Any questions for your doctor? Okay. Well, Matthew, thank you for sharing your time with us today, and go Bucks, huh?
What?
Thanks for sharing your time with us today, and go Bucks.
Right.
All right. Take care, Matthew.
Bye, Matthew.
Gina?
Yes, sorry.
All right. So he likes flag football.
He does like flag football, yes.
He's got to feel awfully good to be able to play flag football.
Yes, it's really great. He loves to run fast and get involved where he was aware of his heart being, we called it the heart boo-boo, was aware that he had a heart boo-boo, he was a little hesitant to run without feeling his heart, the normal, more rapid heartbeat, just when you exercise. But now that he knows that his heart is fixed, he's really,
his confidence has returned.
Yes. It's been so nice.
Outstanding. Any questions that you have for Dr. T before the end of the show? We have about a minute and a half left.
No, he is just a genius. And if anyone has any issues, I totally recommend him. He's a genius.
Outstanding. All right.
Thanks for those words. Thanks.
Oh, anytime, Dr. T. You're the best.
Thanks, Gina. Thanks for joining us today on Focus on Females.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a wonderful story. Congratulations on that case.
Thanks. Yeah, Matthew was a very, you know, sharp kid, and he knew what was going on with his heart, and he was at the right age. This procedure for catheter ablation has been shown over the last 10, 15 years that if a child is over the age of 5, 6, around 20 kilograms of weight, which is 40 pounds, it's as safe to do that procedure in that child as it is in a full-grown adult.
Outstanding. And would you say the same thing about other sorts, like a ventricular cell that needs to be ablated as well as, say, an atrial?
Right. So if somebody had a lot of ventricular extra beats or something called ventricular tachycardia, which is different than what Matthew had, abnormal fast heart rate coming from the lower chambers, this procedure is also, the catheter ablation can be done to fix that and is also quite safe.
Okay. Now I'm going to give you an impossible task. 30 seconds on sudden cardiac death in children and teenagers.
Right. So this could be, you know, hours of discussion. One good thing to know, it's extremely rare.
Okay.
You know, the stories often come out of athletes who pass away suddenly, and some of those are things like long QT syndrome or something that is inherited in the family that we can deal with. The best part about this, our knowledge about these fields is growing immensely. We are aware of many families who have these disorders now, and we can keep those children safe with medication and also with devices.
One quickie. Don't kids need to have a screening EKG before they go ahead and play competitive sports or no?
Not in this country.
Right. Okay. I'd like to thank Dr. Bhavya Trivedi, my good friend, for joining us today on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. And next week, it's Sjogren's Syndrome. In the meantime, this is Dr. Maskin inviting each and every one of you to have a wonderful, happy, and healthy week. And we'll see you next week on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Bye-bye.
Your choice for intelligent talk. Talk Radio 860 WGUL, Dunedin, Tampa Bay, a service of Salem.